Hey everybody, we're back. You're listening to Nerd Funnel. I'm Bob Shway, and with me tonight is Jorge.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Steven.
Hello.
And Steven is freshly back from his sojourn to the Dance of the Sun.
Sojourn.
That's sojourn. It's a good word, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, it's Sundance. I thought I should sound a little bit more intelligent than usual.
Yeah.
Or just intelligent, period.
Yeah, there's a lot of hoity-toity folk among the Sundance crew, so...
So we'll just get right to it. Give us the breakdown. How did it go? You went out there.
Sundance was an amazing experience. It was one of those things where you can't really understand what it's like until you're actually there.
Wow, that does sound hoity-toity.
Yeah, it does. It's the most contrived thing to say about it, but it's one of those things where like I'm a big movie guy and I've kind of watched movies with a lot of love for a long time. So it's always been a goal of mine to try to make it to Sundance. Mm-hmm. But one of the problems was that, like, it's expensive. So I ended up lucking into a trip to go out there and do my thing out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the experience itself completely lived up to my expectations, which is fucking hard to do because...
You're a hard guy to please.
Yeah, it's fucking extremely hard to please.
See.
Yeah. I guess just at the start of Sundance. So Thursday night, Sundance started. And me and my girlfriend went out to the first big premiere of Sundance, which was a movie called Other People.
Other People, okay.
It's, Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
Todd, the psycho killer from Breaking Bad. He's like a gay comedy writer who moves home to live with his mother, Molly Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
And so just for an idea of the experience, there are 1,200 seats in this theater that we would go to.
Yeah.
And we end up getting on the wait list, which is about 400 deep.
So is it only one theater or is it multiple theaters?
No, there's like probably like 8 or 10 theaters throughout Sundance just showing movies constantly.
Gotcha.
And so we get there, we check into the wait list and we're like 60, like I think we were like 61 and 62.
Okay.
And I think out of the 60 or 60, out of the 400 people that were lined up on the wait list, 24 people in front of us left. So we're standing there and waiting, and this is like an hour before the movie, only to find out that they're only letting in a certain amount of wait list people, as expected. They let in 30, and they end up closing the line right in front of us.
No way.
Yes. Fucking blew. So that was my first night at Sundance. So I was completely prepared for the trip to blow at that point.
Well, the way to look at it is like it can only get better from here.
Right. Yeah. You could look at it as it can only get better, or I could
it
look
at like a tease. You know, you're just about to get there, and then denied.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. It was like the worst fucking blowjob ever. Where you're like, this is awesome, and then the girl like jerks you off, and you come in your face.
Well, let's not.
Let's not really hang out.
So it was like the biggest tease in the world. But the next day we got up pretty early and ended up going and catching a movie called Sophie and the Rising Sun, which is like kind of an artsy movie. It was like there was nobody really famous in it. The most famous person was Margot Martindale.
What is she in?
She's been in a ton of stuff. She's like a character actress. So like she was in Justified as Mags Bennett. She was in Million Dollar Baby as Hilary Swank's mom, like the white trash mom in Million Dollar Baby.
Okay.
But yeah, she's an awesome actress and she was in it. But basically it was just a movie about a chick who, small town Southern, South Carolina, I think. And she falls in love with an Asian guy.
Ooh, forbidden love. Wow. Dang.
Well, what makes it forbidden is that it is 1941.
Oh, like for sure.
Weeks before the Pearl Harbor attack.
Oh, wow.
Long time to fall in love, let me tell you.
Yeah, so it's kind of a movie about like what happens after that. And it was a good movie. It was a good flick. It was a little artsy for me, but...
Well, you're at an arts film festival.
I know.
I mean, most of these are going to be a little bit artsy.
Okay, yeah, that's very true. Right up until I saw the next movie, which was a midnight show that same day.
Mm-hmm.
And, we were kind of tired out from the day, so we just kind of hung out and didn't do too much. But we end up going and seeing this movie. And I suggest everybody go see it. Like, you guys have to see this movie.
Is it set for wide release?
I have no idea. I hope it is. I hope it is.
Like, well, give me. I don't know what the, because I've never been to Sundance, and I know that some films come out to wide release from Sundance, but I'm guessing most of these don't really leave the festival.
I have a feeling this movie will leave the festival just on the name alone.
What's it called?
This movie is called The Greasy Strangler.
The Greasy Strangler? That sounds like that sounds like a B-grade porno movie. Yeah.
It's not that far off.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. All right.
I'm going to see it.
Okay. So the setup for this movie is that...
I think I've done The Greasy Strangler.
It kind of sounds like a movie you would pull when you're jerking off.
Right? Yeah. All right.
So basically, this movie is about a father and a son.
Okay.
Nice.
Who live together. The father's probably like, it's supposed to be in like his 70s.
Do we know any of the actors? Is just unknowns?
I mean, yeah, basically unknowns at this point. The father is like in his 70s. The son is probably like in his mid 40s or 50s, something like that. And the movie is kind of like, the easiest pitch for it is, imagine if Napoleon Dynamite, instead of being about an awkward teenager,
yeah,
is about a serial killer.
Napoleon Dynamite serial killer.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's essentially, I can say that.
It's a fucking weird movie.
You could say it's getting serious.
Dude, it's so fucking weird. And it's just, I don't even know. Like, me and the lady left the movie afterwards, and we're walking back to our hotel, and we're just like, I don't know if I even liked it, but I need other people to watch it just to
experience
it.
Did you feel, was it like a David Lynch movie where you like feel unsettled, like really unsettled or weirded out afterward? Like after you watch, I don't know if you watched Mulholland Drive Lost Highway or anything like that.
It's not Lynchian.
Okay.
It's not like David Lynch in the sense that like David Lynch movies are creepy.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of like, I mean, there are, it's disgusting. There's a lot of like penis in it. There's a lot of like old man penis, and dang, there's a lot
Bob,
of like
your movie.
Wow, you're selling it real well here, man.
Just for Bob.
It's fucking weird. Like, there's a lot of full, like, there is probably more full frontal nudity in this movie than I've ever seen in any non-porno movie.
Wow. So we're talking like beyond. Okay, I'm gonna, okay, don't judge me from my knowledge of full frontal nudity for male movies, but like, are we beyond like Boogie Nights and Kevin Bacon in
Boogie Nights, like the one second of,
well, I mean,
a dick?
I mean, for wide release films, I mean, you can't get away with too much frontal dick. I mean, we got that one shot of dick in Fight Club. We got Kevin Bacon in what was that movie with Nev Campbell and the other chick,
Wild Things.
Yeah, we got
Nev Campbell is the girl you pull from that movie.
What was it with Denise Richards, right?
Yeah. Like, Denise Richards is the move on that movie. Like, I can't believe Nev Campbell is where you went.
Well, you know, Bob has a certain taste. We were talking about it earlier, you know, but don't knock it, you know?
I like what I like, you know? To each their own, right? So,
like that carnitas.
If will this film be able to be released wide if there's that much nudity?
I hope so.
If there's going to be edited down.
I need to own it. Like, that's the thing is, like,
you need to own all that dick, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I need to own all of the dick. it's just like horrifying and disgusting because it's like old man wiener.
Okay,
the best.
So
I mean,
it's all prosthetic. It's not real dick.
The son is the killer.
No.
Oh,
I mean, man. The old man's
you kind
the
of
killer.
You lo- spoiler alert, but you learn it in the first like 5 minutes of the movie, where like the movie opens with like the creepy son standing over the father in bed, and they're both wearing Speedos and nothing else.
Nice. Okay.
And they have an argument with I mean, the argument's ridiculous in the first place, but what ends up happening is the dad for no reason just goes, "You're going to think I'm the Greasy Strangler, don't you?" In like the most unconvincing way possible. So you know that he's the Greasy Strangler.
So it's just kind of a journey of how they figure that he becomes the Greasy Strangler?
No, just more of like...
Or just him being the Greasy
Strangler. Yeah, just him being the Greasy Strangler. And like, whatever you imagine the Greasy Strangler is, it's so much fucking weirder than that.
Okay,
like,
all right.
I don't want to give too much of the movie away because like it's just
no, and I kind of like imagining.
Yeah,
what
just,
it could
it's
be.
It's just so fucking weird, and I mean the jokes in the movie just run. Like, it's one of those things where they say like a weird joke, like okay, they'll one of the jokes, for example, is the son says something like you're a bullshit artist, and then the dad goes, I'm not a bullshit artist, you're a bullshit artist. And they continue to go back and forth on that for like 30 seconds. And you're like, oh, this is kind of funny. Like, bullshit artist. It's a funny thing. And then they continue to go for it for another like minute.
Is it kind of like the Family Guy chicken fight?
Yes.
Okay.
It's one of those things where like it just
keeps going.
Right, it starts funny and then it gets to the point where you're just like, God, fucking end it. And then it becomes funny again because it's so ridiculous how long they've been calling each other bullshit artists.
So the joke is no longer the joke. It's the duration.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's weird, like, it's like Dadaism. Like, there's like just, it reminds me of like an Italian movie with just like insanity throughout it.
Whoa.
There's one part where the dad is just walking down the street, breaks into dance in under a spotlight. For no reason.
Whoa.
Singing in the rain.
Yeah, yeah, like, whoa.
Greasing in the rain.
Greasing in the rain.
About to strangle this bitch here.
Don't look at me. It's just so fucking weird. And it's a fun movie and you're laughing the entire time. But I'm pretty sure a minimum of like 5 or 6 times throughout the movie, me and my girlfriend looked at each other and we're like, what the fuck are we watching?
I love you so much.
Dude.
But see, that's a good film that calls into question your
taste.
Motivations and tastes. Yeah, it's like, why are we here? That's amazing.
It was an amazing movie for that reason alone, just because I've watched movies where I was like, I don't understand it, or I don't understand what's happening in this movie, but like I don't like it because of that. Because
mm-hmm.
or like it just doesn't make sense, so it's like stupid. Mm-hmm. But like this was a movie where like I watched it and I like didn't really understand what we were watching a lot of the time,
but you're captivated
like,
by it.
Right, because mm-hmm. it's just so fucked up. Like it's so weird. And like they run a business of like they do walking disco tours.
Wait, what?
Yeah, exactly.
What? I'm not even sure what that type of thing is.
Right. It's a walking tour where they go and explain disco hangouts of famous disco places.
What kind of, is it a present day time period that takes place?
Yes.
Is it like a, where does it take place?
Undecided like, city.
Tijuana.
Probably Tijuana.
I mean, it was filmed in LA, but okay. It's like, there's nothing that makes
nothing
it LA.
It could be anywhere, basically.
Yeah, okay. I mean, they live in the shitty house. And there's like so many gross scenes of like...
Shitty part of town.
They did this thing where like the dad is just eating like the most disgusting foods. Like they'll eat like bacon. But it's not just bacon. It's bacon covered in the grease of like 3 bacon packets, so it's just a solid gelatin.
Oh,
and you
gross.
See them like and they're slathering it on themselves. It's just
the greasy strangler.
Right.
Yeah,
it's just fucked up. Well, and it's funny, like the weird part is like if you're a strangler like and you're greasy like that, those are two very opposite sides of
it. Feels like you wouldn't want your fingers to slip.
Exactly. It's just a fucking weird movie. And
well, like, that's a good name for it then, because it's like this odd juxtaposition. It's like these two things that don't mesh.
Right.
And that is that kind of like the sense you got? It's like nothing really meshed.
Yeah, nothing makes sense. And then like, I mean, the son ends up dating a girl and it's just fucking weird. Like the entire movie is just insane. Like it's just...
Are they all white people? Are they...
No, the father Hispanic. And son are white and the girl is... I want to say she's mixed race because mm-hmm. she doesn't look like any... She doesn't have any like features that would necessarily be ascribed to any race or anything like that. So yeah, and honestly, like her performance is so fucking brave to me.
Really?
Because she does a lot of nudity and she is not what you would consider like typically the type that would do heavy nudity mm-hmm. in a movie. And it's fucking,
wow.
It has to be seen to be explained. Like,
okay.
I need you guys to watch this movie as soon as possible, or like we need to do a screening of it.
Do they give you, for any of these movies, do they give you a release date for some of them?
Because I think a lot of movies there go to get distribution.
Oh, okay.
Like, so they're all produced and everything, but they need someone to distribute these movies. And like, even if this goes like straight to video,
Or Netflix,
if they're just selling it online, like I'm willing to buy like the highest quality copies. I mean, we'll do a screening because like I need people to watch this movie.
I'll watch it. I'm down.
Okay, so we saw that, and the mark of that movie of like a good comedy to me is like how memorable it is. And me and my girlfriend have been quoting that movie every single day since we saw it.
Okay,
like, I mean, there's We ended up meeting the Greasy Strangler himself.
You met the actors that were in the film?
Yeah. I mean, it's just actors everywhere.
Yeah. Did you see any? Oh, we'll get to that. Yeah. This is my separate question. I was wondering, like, how many actors you saw there that you recognized?
Oh, we'll go through a list.
Yeah, we'll go through a list. Okay.
But yeah, so we ended up seeing the dude, and there's a part in the film where the girl does a dance and does a chant, and my girlfriend was like, we were just joking about it so much that day, and then we ran into the actor, the Greasy Strangler, and he and so we started talking to him, and she actually busted the dance out for him, and he died laughing because he was just like, that's amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I have a picture of the guy that we took. I'll show it to you guys, or we'll post it on the site.
You should post it, yeah.
But it's fucking, it was so awesome. I don't know how much more I can say about the movie without really kind of spoiling it.
Well, yeah, like, don't spoil it. Yeah. Just wait till
Everyone needs to check that out. That's a definite. I'm not going to say it's a thumbs up for me. Like, I love this movie, but it's definitely a movie that everybody that listens to this should at least try to watch. If you like, there were walkouts in the movie.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. They walked out of it. Cause it like in the first like 10, 15 minutes, cause they were like, this is not a movie for me.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I've only walked out of two movies ever in my life.
Okay.
That was Lost in Space. The movie.
What?
Was that with Joey Tribbiani?
Yeah. Okay. Lost.
You know what, Joey Tribbiani, he was a hero.
You
know what?
That's a strong word.
You know what? He was a hero.
That's a strong word for a guy that whose claim to fame is eating an entire turkey.
Hey, dude.
Or getting stuck in a turkey out of one episode.
Don't knock it, man. Like, he was wonderful. He made me laugh more times than I can count.
Well, but he wasn't Joey Tribbiani in Lost Space. He was always.
How amazing Joey would it be Tribbiani. If he was Joey Tribbiani?
Would have been a better movie. Would have stayed through the entire thing. Yeah. The other one was Alone in the Dark, the movie that they made
based on a video game.
Yeah, but that was pretty horrible, actually.
It was goddamn awful. Where,
like, then there was like, there's some kind of snake that needed to be born or some egg.
I don't remember. I walked out of it. I blanked.
I think you convinced me to go to that movie. You bastard.
Yes. Like, this is so fucked up. I need to know if I am the idiot or if this movie's too highbrow for me.
So that was the highlight from the
And then we finished it off and we watched a movie called The Kids. It was a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever want to feel like a total piece of shit and not a good person, you should watch Bad Kids. It was called The Bad Kids.
Ooh.
And it's basically just a doc about this school that is for kids who this is their last chance at, like, they basically cannot go to regular school anymore, and this is kind of like their last, like a charter school.
Okay, gotcha.
And it's, I mean, the kids in it are amazing, and like, it's so sad. Some of their stories are so sad, and like the things that they have to go through and just like deal with and struggle with. And then like how they have to fight to kind of get an education, like, mm-hmm. like fight the world at this age to get an education.
How old are these kids?
They're all like 11th and 12th graders.
Okay.
So, you know, junior, seniors in high school. And then it also focuses on like the main administrator, and I think she's like the principal of the school, and she like just, you watch what she does for these kids and you're just like, I'm not doing enough. Like, I am a total, like, I am so selfish compared to this woman who, like, she, like, kids will, or she wakes up at, I think it shows her at one point, it's like 3 a.m, she wakes up and exercises. Then she goes into school, and then she's, like, calling kids to wake them up on the phone and, like, making sure they can make it in, making sure that their home life is okay. And then, like, at one point, a kid doesn't have a ride, so she goes and drives off of school to pick him up and bring him to school. Like,
oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, she's an amazing woman.
Oh.
She's just a fucking amazing woman. So, like, it's just a movie where you see, like, how good somebody can be and, like, how much somebody can do for other people.
So it's not so much, like, I feel like a shitty person because I'm doing something bad. It's that you feel ineffectual. Like,
right.
I'm not doing enough.
Right. And why can this woman do so much? And I could do even a fraction of it and make a difference. And yet I don't. And, like, she does. And, I mean, it was...
See, that's a hero. That's not. That's right.
Joey Tribbiani.
She is what you're looking for when you say Joey Tribbiani.
Joey Tribbiani is a hero. This lady, I don't know, man. Ulterior motives. Who knows?
So this was just a documentary on one school.
Yeah, it was a documentary.
Yeah, it was a documentary. It was just about this one school.
Where at? In
it was in, I want to say, Northern California or San Bernardino.
Okay.
San Bernardino. You
know, that's a rough area.
The tough areas.
Tough area.
Yeah. I mean, it was just such a good, and it follows like three kids specifically, but then like you kind of catch glimpses of others. And I mean, one of the coolest things about going to Sundance and watching these premieres is that usually the director's there and mm-hmm. a lot of the cast is there, and they come up and like do little Q&As after the movies.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. So like in that one, the main administrator was there and two of the kids from the movie were in there.
Oh, wow.
And so because it's a doc especially, like you get to ask them a little bit about their lives and stuff like that and find out how they're doing since the movie. And
okay.
It's really cool. Like it was a really moving experience. And I'm pretty sure that a lot of because the people who generally attend Sundance are pretty affluent. Like, there's a lot of money that just floats around in that crowd.
And this is in Utah, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's in Sundance. Sundance is in Park City, Utah.
Park City, Utah. Okay.
So,
isn't it? It was okay. So, forgive me. It's wintertime and it's in Utah, and they call it Sundance. Yeah. Is it cold and cloudy there?
Oh yeah, it snowed 5 out of 7 days.
Yeah, isn't that just like an irony of naming?
No, it's it is ironic, definitely. It's based on Robert Redford.
Okay,
he Sundance Kid.
Yeah,
Sundance Kid.
Gotcha.
So,
I think that's kind of funny. They hold it in.
Yeah, like, I know. It feels like the weirdest place to hold it because like Park City's actually supposed to be really nice in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, we're gonna do it in the middle of winter.
Well, because it's a good time to be indoors and watch films, I guess.
That's a really good point. I didn't really think about that.
Because if people will go to Utah in the spring, it's like, oh, we want to be outside and take in the nature. Yeah. But if it's
what's
5
the,
degrees
what's
and snowy.
Policy in Utah.
Oh, it's yeah. It's anything goes. Like there's no.
It's not like a dry county or anything.
Yeah, no. There, I guess at one point they were saying that you could only order a drink if you had food. You had to like order
really,
food. Yeah. So that was an issue, but apparently it's they.
Interesting.
A side of fries is food, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing
nachos.
That's what most people did. But it was, yeah, I mean, and the town itself is fucking cool. Like, I really liked the whole city. I mean, snowboarding was awesome. We
is it like medium-sized town?
No, it's small. It's like, I mean, the main area where you're going to kind of participate is Main Street.
Yeah.
And it's mainly like, I want to say like maybe a mile. It's a street that's maybe a mile and a half.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's super small. Yeah, okay. And that street it's full of awesome restaurants and like boutiques and all sorts of cool stuff. But mm-hmm. it's not something where like, it seems like almost like downtown San Diego where like locals would never hang out there. But it's like, okay, all the tourists come in and they spend a ton of loot there.
So how many theaters do they have down there downtown to screen all these shows?
There's, I want to say on Main Street or in the immediate vicinity of Main Street, there's probably like 4 or 5. And then there's a couple that are within like 2 miles. There's probably like 4.
Okay.
And then, or no, I'm sorry. Within 2 miles, there's probably like 4 or 5. And then within right around Main Street, there's maybe like 3. And then they have 2 like further out that are, you know, kind of halfway between Salt Lake City and Park City.
Okay.
And then there's like a few theaters in Salt Lake City too.
Okay. So then the festival takes place at all of those.
Right. And I mean all the big premieres like and like where you're actually going to see the celebrities is in Sundance on Main Street or like around Main Street.
Gotcha.
If you go into Salt Lake City, which probably next time I go to Sundance, what I'm probably going to do is go to watch or go and stay in Salt Lake City and then just travel into Park City because it's about half an hour out.
Okay.
Because it's so fucking expensive to stay in Park City. Like every meal we ate, like cheap meals were like $40.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they got it's like Comic Con San Diego. Like they got to milk it when you get they got it.
Well, but the thing is I don't think that they really changed their prices all that much because I was there before Sundance started.
Uh-huh.
And it was still expensive. It's just because it's a resort town.
Okay.
Like,
gotcha.
There's literally a ski lift that comes through the middle of town, and you can like go into town and just jump on a ski lift and be up on the mountain. It's insane.
Wow,
it's fucking cool.
Catch the ski lift.
Yeah, yeah. I loved it there.
So we've got the Greasy Strangler. We've got what was the documentary called?
The Bad Kids.
The Bad Kids, and then
Sophie and the Rising Sun.
Sophie and the Rising Sun. So, what else did you see? What was next?
Those were the only movies we saw because we tried to get into 3 or 4 other movies,
mm-hmm.
and oh, like all the big premieres we couldn't get into. Like there was another movie we wanted to see, which was called Swiss Army Man.
Okay.
And okay, imagine Castaway.
Okay.
Paul Dano.
Wilson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Paul Dano, who I don't know if you guys know him. He's an interesting character actor. He plays a guy who's been shipwrecked. And,
okay.
Instead of finding Wilson, he finds a dead body. And that's his Wilson.
So Daniel Radcliffe?
Wilson. Daniel Radcliffe plays the dead body.
No way.
It's all about boners, I hear.
It's a lot of boners and farting from what I
understand. What is up with Sundance? It seems to be like a running theme here. Yeah, theme.
It's very weird, but I've heard that a lot of people walked out on that movie.
Yeah, actually, wow. I read that on a news website that I will not, you know, name. Say out loud because... Because
you heard it here first.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
Right, Swiss Army Man.
Swiss Army Man.
No, yeah, but a lot of people walked out on it because they felt a little offended. But I was like, come on, man, dick jokes. Like, you know, come on.
It seemed like a pretty fucked up movie.
So the whole time, Danny Radcliffe was just a dead body.
Yeah, he just plays a dead body.
Wow.
Which is an interesting character choice, which... by the way, The Greasy Strangler, produced by Elijah Wood.
Really?
Yeah. And so Elijah Wood was in the audience when I was watching The Greasy Strangler.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you get to see him afterwards?
We saw him briefly, but we didn't. I mean, I didn't really interact with a lot of stars because it was just kind of, the game was just more about going and just seeing like, shit, like there's a ton of people because they get swarmed by people.
Yeah, it was sure. big media swarms.
We were screaming like, Frodo, goddamn it, Frodo. What's wrong with you?
It was...
Throw that shit.
Share the load.
Well, you know what always bothered me about those movies?
What?
At any time, he could have literally just dropped that ring and just buried it.
Well, yeah, but he wouldn't want to because the ring had the power over him.
Why could he just put a string over it and drag it, you know? Like,
it took so long for anybody to find that fucking ring.
Yeah.
Like, he could have put it anywhere. Like, dig a really deep hole and bury it.
Yeah.
And then just, like... You know, eventually someone will find it, but he'll be dead.
Or just throw it, like, go, like, walk to the west and throw it in the freaking ocean.
Yeah.
And let it drop to the bottom of the ocean. Just tie it to a rock. It's like, take a ship, sail out in the middle of the freaking ocean, tie it to a rock, and drop it in the bottom of the sea.
But you know the ring would call a fish to eat it.
Yeah, right. And then the fish would...
It will spawn so bad, girl, you have no idea.
Yeah. And then the freaking... Somebody would catch the fish and eat... Yeah.
It's almost some weird-ass thing happening, you know.
So, the celebrity. So you said Elijah Wood was there, and
We saw Elijah Wood. We saw right before we met the Greasy Strangler, we saw Sting and Chloe Sevigny hanging out.
Oh, cool!
Yeah, it was just weird. Like, just real quick, because we were getting like, there's a ton of free shit there.
Yeah,
like, that's the other thing about Sundance is like, there's a lot of free stuff.
Swag. Well, let's talk about who you saw, and then we'll talk about what you got.
Yeah, I didn't get anything cool. So
no cool swag.
But,
so what was Sting in one of the films or producing one of the films, or were you just there, just chilling, just be like,
I don't remember.
Hey, I'm Sting. I'm here.
Right. And I was like, don't stand. he was there for, I want to say he was there just perform. He did like a,
show.
He did an underground concert, I think.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Starting up a brand new day.
He's the one that goes. Amber Rose, what was that? Nah, that's a
Thunder Rose. Yeah, the Indian guy. Yeah, that was in his. I don't know what period that was classified of Sting. That was.
I think that was like, I'm tripping on mushrooms, and what the hell is that thing doing? I'm in a desert rose, man.
Just stick with Fade Rautha.
It was weird to see Chloe Sevigny and Sting hanging out, because I'm just like...
Are they together? Are they a thing?
I don't know.
That's strange. I just saw them
walking together, and they were like walking from one celebrity area to another backroom celebrity area. So it was just like real quick glance of them.
You heard on Earth, I know they're together.
Breaking you heard it for a breaking here for like, Sting and Chloe Sevigny.
I'm not your friend, guy.
I'm not your friend, guy. there's a big age gap there.
Yeah, I don't think they were together. I mean, like I said, it was just a quick glance, so it wasn't like I saw them holding hands or anything.
Did he look good? Did he look healthy? Did he look good?
In a world where David Bowie is dying and shit, like, I mean, Sting looked like he was in the peak of health.
David Bowie, man, I am broken up about that.
Are you?
Yeah.
You're a big Bowie guy, huh?
I'm a huge Bowie guy. Ziggy Stardust, I mean, Jorge will attest the fact that I do like my crazy fashionista effeminate male celebrities.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing but
who else falls into that category?
That guy from who's that singer? Sing something Parade, Black Parade.
Oh, from My Chemical Romance, Gerard Way.
There you go.
Yeah, I can get on board with that.
Yeah, whatever.
But one of the things is like when I first started learning music, and my dad taught me guitar when I was very young, and I started out with like old standards and rock and roll, and then jazz and blues and stuff. But when I started getting like rock and other stuff, one of the first songs I learned and the things I really enjoyed was playing Under Pressure, David Bowie and Queen, Man Who Sold the World, Space Oddity. And actually, I just talked to my brother this week, and my brother's an elementary school teacher. And when David Bowie died, he brought a writing prompt into his class and was like, "I want you to finish or reinterpret Space Oddity." And then he got some really amazing answers of what that song could be interpreted as. And so me and my brother had this awesome conversation about like just on the, like David Bowie's genius and like what that song was about. And
That's cool.
And he wasn't just like musician. He was, you know, he was a fashionista. He was married to Iman. You know, he had a really amazing sense of fashion. He was an awesome actor. He's in some good films. The Man Who Fell to Earth. Labyrinth, The Hunger.
A fucking weird movie.
He had a cameo in Zoolander. You know, it's
He was in Passion of the Christ.
Yeah.
He was Pontius Pilate.
And so, yeah, he has like not a prolific actor, but some really amazing roles that he starred in. And then also he was on top of changing revenue off of music when the internet came around. He started selling Bowie bonds, which are like he would go to the record companies because he saw like, okay, well, streaming and MP3s are going to change the way music sales are handled. So here is, I want you to give me like this amount of money up front, and then you can have like this large percentage off all the royalties in the future. Mm. So like he got all that money up front before he lost money on sales of actual records. So like he sold these bonds like late '90s, late 2000s, and made like $50 million something dollars off these bonds.
He was also on top of Iggy Pop at one point.
Yeah. So, and then it's just, he was amazing guy. And then cancer and freaking got him. And then Alan Rickman, too. God, I wanted to punch cancer in the freaking face that week.
That was a bad
Snape is gone.
But you don't want to touch it.
Strikes
back.
It does. But Alan Rickman is a great actor. Got his start in... He didn't always was an actor. He was in like a business. He had a business with some friends of his when he was younger. And then he got into acting later on. He said it was an eventuality that he was going to be an actor.
Really?
Yeah. And then he was in Die Hard, of course, Severus Snape, Galaxy Quest. I loved him as Metatron in Dogma. That was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
And then he was in some other roles that he wasn't really as known for, some more dramatic roles.
What's that one, the book, like the Guide to the Galaxy?
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Yeah, Marvin the depressed robot.
Because I was actually watching it like 2 weeks ago, and I was like, I know that voice.
Yeah, that's Alan Rickman.
It reminds me.
The perfect voice for it. He's like, not that anyone cares, but the restaurant is on the other end of the universe.
Rickman was amazing in Galaxy Quest.
So
that was one of his best roles to me.
I know, seriously. And it's like, it was amazing how... I mean, it was a parody of Star Trek, but it was so thorough a parody that it kind of transcended the parody genre into its own thing.
You know they're doing a series, right?
They're going to do a series. So it transcended its own parody, which I thought was amazing. So that's pretty cool. So we kind of got off track there, but... Yeah. So wrapping up Sundance. So you got to see three films, and then you got to see Elijah Wood... Sting, Chloe Sevigny. How do you say Sevigny?
Yeah.
Well, who else did you see?
Keegan Michael Key from Key and Peele.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's
all right.
That fucking dude is tall. Like he's a big dude.
Did he do a show? Did he do a stand-up?
I think he was judging movies there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think he was one of the judges. Him and John Hamm was supposed to be there. I didn't see him.
Mm-hmm.
Who else did we see? Oh, okay. So the big one for me was I went out of my way to talk to him, but Kyle Chandler, most people probably know him as Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights, mm-hmm. and he's got a Netflix show called Bloodline. I'm an insanely huge Friday Night Lights fan.
Okay.
Like, I love that show like I love my mother.
Is that
like,
show on Netflix?
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Okay, I'll have to start watching it.
Yeah, it's a football show that's not about football. It's
okay. Well, I remember there was a movie called that. Is that the
it's not related to the movie. The movie, I mean, it's the same idea about like West Texas football and like the setup you've seen before if you've seen Varsity Blues.
Yeah.
But the show is just fucking amazing. And, like, Coach Taylor is the dad that I always... Like, he's, like, my second dad. Like, I literally watch that show, and I'm like, I am a better person for having watched the show because I would do what I'm supposed to do because of this character.
Wow, that is very high praise. Yeah, that's, like, the highest praise you can get.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It's, okay, I'm checking it out.
It transformed me. And so, like... I went and I saw him walking. I didn't actually even see him. My girlfriend saw him and she's like, oh my God, that's Kyle Chandler. And cause she loves the show too.
Yeah.
And, so I chased him down and I was like, Mr. Chandler, blah, blah, blah. And he was on his way to a premiere walking with his wife and his wife just kept walking. Cause I'm sure she's used to him getting stopped.
Yeah.
And he was on his way to a premiere and late and he stopped and he talked to me for a minute and shook my hand. And I was just like, I gushed to him about yeah. like, I fucking love you so much.
Yep.
And he's like, well, thank you very much. And he shook my hand and I was like,
and then you have not washed your hand since.
I
jerked off to like 10 times. Yeah.
Exactly. Like this is the first thing that I did. It was, dude, it was so awesome. Like that was the most exciting moment for me.
So he was there as a judge, an audience member.
Was he
in a film?
Yeah, he had a movie. He had a movie there with Casey Affleck.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I can't remember the movie, but it was supposed to be good.
Was it a hard one to get into?
Yeah, it was another one where like, because me and my girlfriend, that was the next movie we were gonna go to, was to go to his movie just to try to meet him.
Oh, I see.
And so we met him on the street, and we're like, "Fuck it, we're not gonna fight the crowd."
Isn't that amazing when like you are trying to meet someone, like you go to a concert or you go to a film and or like I mean I've never been to like a movie premiere like film festival, but that happened to me with my favorite band.
Oh,
okay. Up in San Francisco, they came from Japan. They're called The Pillows, and
what kind of music?
J rock. Yeah, exactly. They if you didn't know, I found out they soundtracked. They four guys from Hokkaido. They've been around since '89. Amazing musicians. And they have, I found about them when they soundtracked one of my favorite anime shows, Fooly Cooly, FLCL, that came out in 2001. And then they soundtracked that and then I got into them and then I just followed them, religiously. And I've been to every show they've held in America, on the West Coast. I mean, they've toured to New York, Chicago too. But anyway, so they were up in San Francisco, so I bought tickets for their LA and San Francisco shows, and I went up to see them in San Francisco, and they were going to sound check at their venue early, and I just happened to go out of the hotel, and they were staying in the hotel across from me.
Oh, that's awesome!
And they were all just like pouring out of the front lobby of the hotel opposite, and I'm just like, okay, this is it. So I go up there and. It's nerve wracking.
It's nerve wracking. All he had was his notebook.
I had my notebook, and my my Japanese is frail. Boku no nihongo wa wari desu.
Watashi wa ninja desu.
So they don't speak much English. So
okay.
I went up to them and I was like, "Sumimasen, piros desu ka?" And they're like, "Yeah," and they're like, "Oh, the nihongo desu ne?" And I said, "Yeah, chotto, a little bit." And so I'm trying to speak to them. And so then, luckily enough, one of their handler people there came out and they speak English. And so we actually had a conversation. And I told them, I said, hey, you know what? You kind of changed my views and my perception and my ability to play music. And I just want you to know, because I couldn't, you know, illustrate and elucidate all that to them in English and have them understand how right. meaningful I was trying to be. So then the person kind of translated for us. And then they were like, you could see the change in their face. They're like, wow, this guy really likes us.
Right.
So they signed my notebook and my ticket and I got a picture with them and I framed it.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I got to be on their tour DVD. Some guy that was, they were filming their American tour.
Uh-huh.
Like the guy was filming and he came around and like tore and like put.
Did he catch the part where you were telling them like how much you meant?
Yeah,
meant?
Yeah, oh, that's exactly. Awesome. And so then, about 4 or 5 months later, their tour DVD goes up on sale, and I was looking at it online, and I'm up on there, and I'm like, oh my God, it's
who's
so
that,
cool.
Who's that cute little girl?
My hair. Well, yeah. So that's,
she loves them so much.
That's awesome. So I definitely feel you on that one. That's amazing experience. That sounds like Sundance is like a transformative experience.
Oh yeah, it's one of those things where like, backtrack a second. when we met Kyle Chandler, there was two ways we could go, because my girlfriend wanted to go to the Sundance store to just like check out the swag there.
Yeah.
And so there was one like kind of across the street, but a little bit further down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, let's just stay on the same side of the street and keep walking up it. And so she eventually gave, she didn't understand why. And I was like, there's no reason why. I just don't want to cross the street because I'm fucking lazy. So we kept walking on the same side of the street and happened to meet Kyle Chandler. If we had gone across the street, we would not have been able to meet him. And that was like the moment in Sundance for me.
Oh,
so
wow.
That's why we were like, it was meant to be that, like, you know, we had to meet
it's like
him.
That all these circumstances had to line up exactly right. The right way.
And we had just finished eating, or we had, I think we had just come out of a movie actually. So it was
can't
like,
even say it was
we
could have
went either way. Yeah. It was
like,
it
if
was
I, awesome. If I had taken a piss after the movie, we wouldn't have made it.
Right.
Like, yeah. It's all these little things have to line up. Yeah.
And I mean, seriously, like this dude's performance in Friday Night Lights is exactly either a mentor or coach or dad that you would want. And that's what's so amazing about it, because it's five seasons. It's not like a short show.
Mm-hmm.
And he just resonates so well throughout the entire thing. And
is it a show that improves as it goes on, or does it have, does it peak and then fall off, or is it?
It's pretty good throughout the
pretty
whole
consistent?
Thing. And I mean, four and five was season four and season five were really good, because I think especially season five, they knew that was their last season.
Mm-hmm.
So it does a lot of like wrapping up of storylines and kind of, I mean, as much as it finishes things off, it leaves certain things open, because it's a story about life and like these kids who are growing up and, you know, like just life in small town Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So it leaves certain things open where you're like, well, that's just life. Like certain things you don't get to know.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was amazing. So fucking good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Do you get, the Sundance tickets, like, so do they, to get into the festival, do you have to have one ticket and then you buy tickets to the theater?
No.
Or is it like a one purchase gets you into all the theater type things, or how does that work?
The way it worked, well, there's a couple different ways you can do it. The way me and my girlfriend did it, because like the trip was kind of a last minute trip.
Mm-hmm.
So what you can do is you can go online if you want early, and you can buy passes to 10 movies for $600.
Okay.
So, you know, $60 a movie.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Although sometimes it's catching up to real life.
Right. I'm not going to say it guarantees you a spot in the movie, but you're very, very likely to get into a movie if you're, like, you're 95% of the movies you try to get into, you will. Because
okay.
You actually have a ticket. There are, the other way, which is the way that me and my girlfriend did it, is you register online, and then when a movie comes available that you want to see, like 2 hours before the show, you go online, press a button that takes you to a lobby where the wait list is.
Yeah.
And you get assigned a number. Kind of like if you've ever flown Southwest.
Okay.
Thing.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Then half an hour before the movie starts. So you have an hour and a half then to get to the movie. Stand in line, and then they'll let in a certain amount of people to fill up the seats for the non-ticket holders. And that costs $20.
Okay. And are the seats assigned at that point?
No. Nothing is assigned.
Nothing's
There's
assigned.
No assigned seating.
Okay.
So, I mean, almost every movie had some people get in. So, mm-hmm. like, if you buy the $600 package, you'll get into most movies. But for the most part, I think that if you're want to do Sundance on the cheap and you just want to be there, you don't necessarily have to go to the premieres. You can do it on just the wait list alone, because there's enough movies and enough showings of movies, because they'll premiere movies and then they just show them throughout the week at random theaters. So you can kind of do it on like the $20 method. It just requires a little more planning, a little more effort, but you can totally do it.
Are you planning on going next year? Is this something you can premeditate for next year?
Me and my girlfriend were talking about that, because we were very nervous about the experience, because it was, it's an expensive trip. It's not a cheap trip by
no,
any means.
No, I don't imagine so.
But we were talking
and
about
$40 a plate for food. Yeah.
That a lunch. I mean,
that's nuts.
Yeah. Hey, no, Danny's homie.
No.
Like our dinners were always like $80 to $100.
Jeez. Okay.
Packing the filet mignon, dude. Come
packs,
on, man.
No, like a pork loin, like it's a fucking pork chop. It was like $35.
Jeez.
Don't they have like a drift?
Bring some PB&Js, man.
Yeah, I mean, the closest thing was like a mile out, you could walk to Burger King.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, and that's
the,
worth it.
In the snow. Yeah.
In the snow, if you want. Or you can walk and just say, fuck it. Like, I'm just going to be at least around Park City and just fucking... That's kind of what we consigned ourselves to, was just like, you know what? We're just going to deal with it, and we're just going to fucking, like, live it up for a week and just have fun.
You know what would really hit well is a taco vendor. You know, let us...
We went to Mexican food there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How's the Mexican food in Utah?
$35. $35 bill at Mexican fucking food.
Yeah.
I know,
the,
right?
The Mexican food is not great.
No.
It's not.
I don't imagine so. I didn't imagine so.
If anybody's ever eaten Mexican food at the Midwest.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's like Midwestern Mexican.
It's terrible.
Food. Like, it's just, it's an imitation
of bland. There's no spice.
Yeah, no spice.
No flavor. It's like the sex over there, you know? It's like, yeah, you know? Well, I guess.
What?
So awesome on the whole, great experience. And
it was awesome.
And so, just a recap for the listeners: the films to keep an eye for or watch that you said were The Bad Kids,
The Bad Kids
documentary.
Watch that. I'm almost positive that'll be on Netflix in some time.
And
just because it's so fucking good.
And when I post the cast, I'll list these in the notes.
Yeah.
So The Bad Kids, The Greasy Strangler, and
watch Sophie and the Rising Sun.
Sophie and the Rising Sun,
because it's almost like. The movie is like a film version of a watercolor movie, watercolor painting.
Oh, wow. I like that.
It's really pretty. And it's like, there's a lot of like, I don't know really how to describe it other than to say that like, it just flows. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, there's not really like necessarily a ton of, you know, deep plotting or anything. It just kind of flows, and it's pretty. I mean, it's a good looking movie.
So, and it's a more visual aesthetic movie than
it's a visual movie, and like the story's interesting, but it's just, I mean, it's a romance.
Okay,
it's a good flick. I mean, I liked it.
Cool. So no hard hitting kind of sci fi or fantasy stuff released there.
Nah, there's not really. I mean, Greasy Strangler. Greasy, I guess the one thing I was bummed that I missed was the day we left was the premiere of Kevin Smith's movie.
Oh,
Yoga Hosers.
Okay.
Which I really wanted to see that movie, and like just the timing didn't work out. So
he was there in town, I guess.
Yeah, then. Him and his daughter, Johnny Depp, and Johnny Depp's daughter.
Oh, wow.
Because they're all in his movie.
Oh, man. So, oh, that sucks.
Yeah, so I really wanted to see that flick, but it just didn't work out to see it. So that was, you know, we could have went to go see the premiere of the new Rob Zombie movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it's called 31, which is, it's about like people who get kidnapped by carnies or something.
Oh, I hear about that. There's always clowns in his shit.
Yeah. It's,
or people with masks. It freaks me out.
Yeah.
Well, that's the point, though.
Yeah. I mean, Devil's Rejects was an awesome.
That was good. That was great.
A great fucking movie. But I really wanted to go see that, but my girlfriend was kind of like...
Nah, it's not her deal.
She's not a gore, like, horror movie person, so...
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad that you got to go and have that experience. That's really cool.
So fucking cool. I'll go back. We were talking about going back eventually, but I don't know if next year we'll do it, but we'll definitely go back at some point. If we go next year, then maybe we'll do a whole cast out
there. Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Speaking of upcoming events, I just want to give our listeners a heads up. I got tickets to WonderCon, which will be late March. Yeah, let me know if you want to go. Late March, early April. It's $35 for the whole weekend. And it's in Anaheim. So it's like literally we can just
drive there and back every day.
Drive there and back every day. It's like it's no big deal. So if you wanted to come at least one day.
As long as we hit Six Flags, yo, what's up?
Yeah, we can hit something. But basically for our listeners, WonderCon is a Southern California comic book convention put on by the same people as Comic-Con. It's just kind of like the Diet Coke version. It's more manageable.
It's like the OG Comic-Con.
Yeah, it's like what Comic-Con used to be.
Yeah.
God, I sound like a freaking hipster. God, it's like Comic-Con used to be. But
it was good.
We liked it.
It's like
it was cool.
The tickets are affordable and accessible. I didn't have to stand in an online waiting room. And then when you go there, you can actually go to the panels and not have to stand in line for, you know, a day. And you can actually see panels you want to see and like not get trampled in the exhibition hall and still get a wide variety of good experiences. So I'll definitely be doing some pictures and video and casting from that. Also, I got tickets to Star Trek Symphony.
What is this?
San Diego Symphony is doing a tribute concert to the music of Star Trek.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm going to be...
God!
Exactly. Yes. God, I hope. Actually, I just found a random fact. I just found out today on NPR that William Shatner, is going to be in town tomorrow doing like a one man show in San Diego doing a one man show.
For what?
I have no idea. It's going to be like
singing or like
it's probably it's going to be him. So he's going to sing and dance and tout his own horn. He's, you know, he's a character. He's just going to do himself basically. Right. For and I think it's at the Old Globe or the Copley Symphony Hall. I can't remember exactly where it is. It's too late to get tickets. Already sold out. But I'm just like, I'm going to read about it and talk. I'll probably talk about it in the next cast. See what people said about that, because he actually spends a lot of time in San Diego because of the racetracks here. Oh. He's a huge horse person.
I had no idea.
Yeah, William Shatner's
like
a
ponies. Like
he's
ponies.
A huge horse fanatic. So he always comes, like whenever there's a Star Trek convention in San Diego, he'll come because the Del Mar racetrack is here.
Okay,
and there's a lot of horse stuff around here. So,
who do you think is the bigger star now? Shatner or George Takei?
That's a good question. Internet star? George
just
Takei.
Star.
Just a star.
I'm not talking about monetarily. Cause,
oh, I mean, Shatner will,
yeah.
Yeah,
Shatner's got more.
No, I think that's tough because I think it's...
Like, who's more recognizable? Do you, or not necessarily recognizable, but who is... Like, if you...
I think Shatner's more recognizable, but as far as, like, media presence, I feel like Takei's got the dominant right now. I mean, Shatner did like the what was that? The
he's more popular.
Well, he was in those commercials Priceline.
He owns a piece of that company.
Well, I'm sure he does because
because he was a spokesman for that company before it got big.
Yeah,
and that's how they signed him on. They're like, well, we'll give you a piece of it, and now it's fucking gigantic.
Yeah, but I'm sure he's got a piece of it. I think he's still a bigger star, but Takei I think has a bigger voice now in like so in media.
Social media.
So you think like if you asked a kid who was Shatner or who was George Takei, they would
more likely they probably would know Takei right now. Yeah, right now, because he's just more of a pop, like more in pop culture limelight right now. excuse
rhymes
me.
With gay.
Yeah. Oh my. We love you, George Takei.
Yeah.
So, all right. Coming up in February, we've got Deadpool coming out.
Dude, oh,
fuck.
March is going to be Dawn of Justice.
What are you most excited for?
Dawn of Justice, yeah. Batman versus Superman. They released a new trailer spot on the NFC AFC Championship game on Sunday for Dawn of Justice. So I'm looking forward to that.
What? I didn't see it.
It's like it's just like a 30-second spot.
Oh, is it the one where Batman's talking to Alfred?
Yeah, and then Superman just like the bat dies now or something like that. It's he's like next time they turn on your signal or your light, don't go. Like,
You know what I'm willing to bet it is?
Yeah,
is that you're gonna see that scene, mm-hmm. and then the next scene is gonna be the one that we've already seen of Batman pulling the cover off of the bat signal and lighting.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, and then turning
like,
it on.
Fuck you.
And we got Civil War coming up again, or coming up in March as well. Mm. Or no, is it March or May? I think it's March. Yeah, March. And then we've got X-Men Apocalypse. I totally forgot about X-Men Apocalypse.
Oh, that's going to be
horrible.
About
that movie.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be just god awful.
It seems like it's too much.
You know, honestly, that's what I feel like.
Although, I have confidence in Michael Fassbender, but go ahead.
No, like whenever you see a movie, especially the trailers, like, you know, number one in America, whenever you see them start to spout that nonsense, mm-hmm. don't go.
Yeah.
Don't go, because what was the last one that sucked ass? And it's like, number one in America, number one comedy. What was it?
What was that movie? I don't know. I don't go to many comedies now.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to watch.
I always
comedies.
Wait for those to come out on Netflix or on demand or something like that. Deadpool. I'm excited to see Deadpool. That's gonna be funny.
I'm excited to see it, even if it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm glad that they're taking a different direction with comic book movies now.
Yeah,
like they're willing to go hard R.
Well, a hard R plus like the very nature of that film is to break the film.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah. Deadpool's very existence is to break his own frame. So I'm excited to see how they fit that into the film.
It's the fourth wall.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to see if they're going to do that.
Did you see that they did like an ad campaign where it was like, they started selling Deadpool as a
like a romantic
comedy.
Yeah, exactly. So they're messing with the genres.
It's fucking amazing.
I like how they're trying to live up to his effect as a genre and frame breaking character.
Right, right.
So that'll be exciting. So we got some exciting stuff coming up. I've been watching a couple shows. I just posted today a write-up on the X-Files premiere. I don't know if you guys are X-Files fans back in the 90s.
Yeah, that was a great show.
Yeah, I'm down with X-Files.
Yeah, so they had a two-night premiere on Sunday and Monday.
It was after the game, right?
So, yeah, it was after the NFC game. Actually, I had to watch it online because I set my DVR to record it, and the NFC AFC championship went long, over, and then so I had like 20 minutes of the show, and then I'm like, what the fuck happened? So then I had to go on watch it on Fox or whatever on the website. But
I had very little interest in this reboot.
So the thing is, I was interested in it because I wanted to see if they were going to do anything new, and they didn't. It's mostly, it felt like, and I wrote this in my review, and you guys can watch it or read it. It's up online now. But
Nerdfunnel.com.
Basically, they kind of just like, okay, it's been 14 years. We had Bush era. We had 9/11. We have Obama. And now let's just dive right back into exactly where we left off. And it's like, okay, and they kind of, I mean, it's the first couple episodes, so you got to give people a little chance to fill it out. But the same vibe was there, and they didn't feel like there was any weight to their reunion. They didn't feel like there was anything heavily missing. It just feels like, oh, we're teamed up now. I wanted a little bit more of struggling to get back together. It was like by, you know, 45 minutes into the first pilot, the reboot pilot, or the relaunch pilot, they're back in it doing the same stuff, and I was like, this feels too much the same. I think I wanted something a little bit different.
They didn't earn it. It doesn't feel
I didn't feel earned. So, but I'm going to give it a chance.
Is it mythology-based or is it like case of the week based?
Both. There's like overarching themes, and then there's kind of case of the week, and sometimes those will fit in. Although, back in the 90s,
you're so full of hipster quotes right now. Back in the
90s, when life was good and things were awesome. No. But like long arc stories weren't the norm back in the 90s for TV shows, especially for science fiction.
There was no genre stuff.
The X-Files was a little experimental in putting together a long arc that lasted the entire show. That was right. Something that hadn't been done in most genre television before.
I heard they're bringing Cigarette Smoking Man back.
Oh, yeah, he's back. He's in.
How the fuck did they bring him back? That's bullshit.
You should see. He's smoking through a hole in his neck.
Oh,
It was so funny.
But he was in the fuck...
Spoilers.
Alert.
Yeah, for
if I remember correctly, he got blown up.
Yeah.
Did they explain it?
No. He was like, it was the last scene of the pilot.
Hence the hole.
There's a hole. He's smoking
through
a hole.
That was all the effect of an Apache helicopter.
It wasn't even him. Like someone like put the cigarette into the hole him.
It's that bad.
Yeah. So I'm gonna see what's gonna. I'm see what's happening.
He's got all that black goo alien tech though.
Like, yeah. So there's a whole bunch of that alien stuff coming back. Like there's alien tech, there's alien human hybrids, all the conspiracy theories coming back into play. And then what was really interesting to me was Joel McHale, of former Talk Soup and Community fame, plays like this conservative pundit mouthpiece person, like Bill O'Reilly. But it fell completely flat. Like I didn't buy it.
Oh, really?
Didn't buy it at all. So I'm very interested to see if
they're a Joel McHale fan?
I loved him in Community. He was awesome. And Talk Soup was good. But it fell kind of flat for me. So overall, like a little underwhelmed by the initial couple episodes, but I'm going to give it, I'm an optimist. I'll give it a second. I'm going to give it a scene.
There's only like eight episodes, right? Six episodes, eight episodes.
And then I've been watching Flash started back up past couple weeks, off to an awesome start. DC Legends of Tomorrow. I wrote a very extensive review on that. I'll refer you guys to read that, but suffice to say, it's an interesting ensemble. They've got a good setup. I'm afraid it might go the way of like real world like road, like you know those MTV
real world
shows where they just kind of go off the rails on their own drama and kind of lose themselves. I'm worried that might fall apart like that a little bit if they're not careful, but. They've got interesting dynamics. There's like these little duos within the large group of people. There's eight of them. And they
kind
of, it's a big cast. That's what I'm worried about. Is it too big to handle? Is it too big to give each character enough weight and time? So we'll see. I'm interested to see how it plays out. It's the first episode is up, of that. I think it's on CW. And then I haven't watched any of the new Arrow yet. I have been watching The Expanse on Sci-Fi Channel, and it's the season finale next week, and I'm going to write a review on the season one. But sci-fi has been doing a really good job with world building for like science fiction shows. They have this past year, Killjoys, Dark Matter, and now this movie, this show, The Expanse, where they do a really good job at plotting conflicts between large factions and doing good world building. And this is no different. They're getting really, really good at it. I'm surprised. The Expanse is about Earth, Mars, and the Earth, asteroid Mars. Belt.
Earth, Mars.
Earth, Mars, and the asteroid belt. They're all independent kind of... Earth and Mars are separate governments. They're like factioned out human beings.
Yeah, we talked about this.
Yeah. So we talked about this before. It's really gotten good. And then there's a 2-hour season finale next week. And then I'm going to do a write-up on the whole season and get a post on that, but and then we'll
are
talk
they
about
back
it more.
For season two?
I'm not. There's not a word out on it yet. I think so, though. I don't see how they wouldn't be. It's an amazing show. So I'll have that up probably end of next week, and then we can talk about it next time we cast. But yeah, that's what I've been watching. And then other than that, what about you, man? Have you been playing? You been watching? You been doing anything?
Nothing.
No. Weren't you?
You know what? My PS3 broke. About 3 days ago.
Oh, you're kidding.
I cried a little bit.
Did you lose all your save data? Everything's gone?
Yeah, for sure. Immediately, I...
All that Dark Souls time?
Oh, dude, let me tell you about it.
Oh, no.
All your Dark Souls time?
Oh, I don't even want to talk about
can we have a moment of silence?
No, because I'm actually very upset about that. So, like, something happened where it said that my files were corrupted, and I had to reset the whole thing to factory specs or whatever.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about Skyrim, you know, like Elder Scrolls, whatever.
Yeah.
I played that for hundreds of hours.
Oh, my poor baby.
It was all gone.
Oh.
Dark
it's like
Souls
losing a child.
Yeah.
But were you planning on ever replaying it?
Yes, sir. Every now and then I'd get drunk.
But even if you never plan to replay it, like, there's plenty of, like, PS1 era and PS2 era games that I'm probably never going to go back and play again, but I have the data cards there because that's a large chunk of my life recorded, and I have all those memories and...
Yeah,
and
but you saw the memories, regardless if you have the physical object. Yeah,
there's something about having that data that's just like a piece of you.
Old men, dude, like fucking everything lives in the cloud now, man.
No, yeah, but I mean, yeah, you can't replace that, dude. Dark Souls 2, like I put so much time into that.
You had a good build on that. You had an amazing build on Dark Souls 2.
That's playing up till 5 in the morning, but whatever, dude.
Why don't you just go back and like replay it? It gives you think of it this way. You know, light a candle instead of cursing the darkness. Think of it this way.
I'd rather
you have an excuse. I know. You have an excuse to fucking go back and play this game now.
No, yeah. So I'm thinking about like setting up and buying an Xbox because that's clearly like the best. No, it's not. Fudge that. I'm going to try to buy a
PS4.
PS4.
Yeah. When we start doing Let's Plays, we'll definitely...
We're going to do a crowdfunding on NerdFunnel?
Yeah. Let's get, we're going to get our Patreon going on our YouTube channel for Jorge's PS4.
Yeah.
And just fucking straight begging.
Yeah.
Just straight begging.
Straight begging. Come on, guys. Just do it.
Well, we're getting our editing and recording machine going for our LPs. So those will
Let's
be up
Plays?
Starting in the next couple months. Well, let's see if we can crowdfund some PS4 money. No, I'm so sorry your PS3 died.
Yeah, I'm very sad too. But you know, it's just it comes with having two kids.
Mm-hmm. Did they
fuck your PS3 up?
I don't know. I want to blame them. You know, like I really do.
You corrupted the data.
Yeah, but like no, it's just like they constantly knock it down. Like you know, the older one will step on it to climb over the couch. The younger one will pull this, pull that. Like my 3-year-old, he was 3 when it happened. Somehow ripped the USB, the socket. You know how that has the little cables?
Yeah.
Inside, somehow he ripped those out.
How
exactly?
Brutal.
No, and
I'm a grown ass man. I couldn't figure out how to rip that out.
No, yeah, because my wife told me, and I'm like, "Are you mad?" I'm like, "No, I'm not mad. I'm just like." How the hell did he do that? And then I look at him like, Ramiro, like, oh, I'm sorry, Dad. I broke it. I'm like, no, that's cool. Whatever.
That's cool. Whatever. Yeah, sure. Whatever.
I can buy another cord. But
you just ruined my life.
Go find someplace else to live.
But how did you do it?
Like, yeah. Can you show me?
Yeah.
Show me. It's weird. They don't. Okay, I'm gonna sound old manish again. They don't build them like they used to. Dude. Okay, I still have
Nintendo. Still fucking.
Yeah. My SNES. I would carry that thing back and forth across the street to my friends' houses. I dropped that thing in the dirt, in the mud, on the concrete. Yeah. One of my controllers. My dog chewed the connection ports to the controller. It still freaking works. Amazing. What
they killed the dog.
the dog stopped working, but the controller still. The controllers still work. No, man. That's rough. I remember when I lost my PS1 memory card, and it was just like all my first...
Final Fantasies.
My Final Fantasy VII, my first round save data for that, my Parasite Eve save data, my first Legend of Dragoon playthrough save data. All that stuff was just gone. My Suikoden save data.
Oh, no.
Yeah. When I lost that, I literally cried. I mean... Everybody, Hori knows very well that I cried, lots of things. But,
sensitive man, nothing wrong with that.
But man, yeah,
at least
that
he's
was
single.
That shit.
He once dropped a jar of mayonnaise, started fucking bawling on the floor of the kitchen.
man, that's rough. So you can borrow mine whenever you want.
Oh.
Because I don't have a lot of time to play. So, and right now I'm working on most of the stuff I'm working on is on Wii U.
Really.
Or
yeah, because I'm probably gonna get one. Hey guys, tax refunds coming up, guys. Yeah, get that shit all locked down.
I smell refund.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm gonna build a new editing and machine for our LPs. I might just throw in a good, make it a good gaming PC too. And
it's all gonna be there.
Yeah,
I'm fucking just
get
it up.
Really awesome.
And we can start playing on Steam.
What's up?
And we can start playing on Steam.
Yeah, get some good recording off of there. And then we can get Brian on board and we can do some landing and stuff like that.
Dude, I'm so excited. Do you guys ever play XCOM?
I've never been a big XCOM player. My nephew is, but I've
more like a
it's FPS.
Yeah, no,
not
it's a turn-based squad strategy game, and it's fucking brilliant. Like, you control a squad of soldiers and you're basically just defending an alien invasion. Except your characters suffer permadeath, so they die in the mission, they're fucking gone.
Oh, okay.
It is an insanely intense game, mm-hmm. and it's very strategy heavy. XCOM 2 comes out on the 5th, I think, and so I'm fucking so stoked for that. Like, just got my pre-order in today.
Oh, nice. Well, it comes out when?
The 5th.
Of February?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so if you guys get a chance, come and fucking play with me. There's a multiplayer version, too.
Oh,
it's
nice.
Kind of like playing chess with guns.
What's your Steam handle?
Tiltmonster.
Tiltmonster. Okay, go find Tiltmonster on Steam and play XCOM 2.
Yeah, or play anything with me. I just fucking want... I have no friends on Steam, so come and play with me.
I'm looking forward to... I'm trying to get my shit together so I can finish Xenoblade finally, the original, and play Xenoblade Chronicles X, the sequel, on Wii U.
What is it? Wait, Xenoblade. Not so, Xenogears.
Not Xenogears. Xenoblade was a Monolith Soft and XSEED release that was back to 2012, came out, and it's a really awesome JRPG. And they just released on Wii U the sequel, which is just it's amazing. It's a mind-blowing, expansively.
What kind of game is it? Is it like an action game or?
So it's a JRPG, but like open world. So like
Witcher 3.
You know, that's a good. Not quite that level, but like let's say GTA San Andreas meets Tales of Symphonia.
Why'd you go San Andreas?
I don't know. Because honestly, that's my favorite GTA because that's got the best. Because it got the best soundtrack.
It's not even a great soundtrack. It's a nostalgic soundtrack for you as a '90s kid.
All right, I'm just outing myself as a '90s boy all over the place today. But Xenoblade Chronicles is it's about these. Xenoblade Chronicles is about. These guys that are there's two they live on a gigantic creature, like it's the whole world.
Okay.
It's about scope, like the scope of this creature is amazing. They live on this creature and it is,
so they're like barnacles.
It is their it's their world, like, but the scope is like, think about if you were an ant on the Empire State Building. That's the scope.
Really?
Yeah, it's huge. And you can see, like, you'll be walking through, like, the forest or the mountains or whatever, and you'll see, like, way up in the sky, like, the shadow of, like, its elbow way up in the sky. And you'll...
It's a good graphic? Like, graphically, it's a good game?
I mean, for the Wii, it's about as much as the Wii can handle graphically. So, but it's there's two of them. There's these gigantic creatures. One is biological and one's mechanical, and the beings are at war with each other.
Oh, okay.
So it's really, really interesting. And then, so yeah, that's the sequel. But this one of the characters, his name is Shulk, who is a playable character in the new Smash Brothers.
Shulk. Yeah, I do know this.
Yeah,
okay.
And the voice acting is all New Zealand and Australian. It's interesting.
Crikey.
Like, I'm really feeling it. It's like the...
I'm going to poke the Zelda straight in the ass.
So he has a sword called the Monado, which is it gives him the ability to see the future.
The Mulatto?
Monado. M-O-N-A-D-O.
I was going to say, that's like a really offensive sword name.
It's the only sword that can damage non-biological... these non-biological entities from the other world. And it gives him the power to control or see the future. And so it really makes it interesting as far as combat goes, because you'll get...
it's like fantasy aesthetic?
Yeah, definitely fantasy. But the battle system is really fun. The exploring the world is like the best part. I love exploring it because it's so huge, and you get experience for exploration. So it encourages you to just poke around, and you'll find like there's a bajillion side quests, and the cool thing about the game is that because you have foresight... You'll find things for side quests you haven't even accepted yet, and it'll tell you. It's like, hey, you might need this when it gets to this point.
Oh, okay.
So it's a really interesting game. And so then they had a sequel the sequel called Xenoblade Chronicles X come out for Wii U back in November. And I have not yet finished the original because it is so expansive. And I was trying to do all the side quests, and now I've kind of given up on the side quests. I'm like, I just got to finish the story so I can get to the next one. So I'm working on that one. And then I really want to get into Bloodborne because they just released DLC for that one.
I was never a big Bloodborne person.
The Bloodborne, I really like it.
A vampire girl?
What? No, Bloodborne was... It's basically like Dark Souls 2, except... Yeah. It's a Dark Souls 2 with a faster paced, better, I think more streamlined character build and item and weapon fashioning system. And instead of like the Darks, it's still got a deep mythos like Dark Souls, but it's like more of a H.P. Lovecraftian like Eldritch horror type.
Oh, very cool.
And it's got
it's the one where Dark Souls is kind of like like a slower battle. You know, because like I mean, there was like the swordsmanship and all stuff, but it was kind of slow.
Yeah, this is faster. Yeah, this
kind
is
like
faster.
A Victorian kind of.
Yeah, kind of Victorian era setting. It takes place the hub world is called Yharnam, and it's like this like Victorian era British, but it's like corrupted with like vile, disgusting eldritch creatures,
so like,
and
maybe like a little like Devil May Cry, but not as
over the top. It's subdued, but it's a really great game. The mythos is deep without being too revelatory, so it's like there's lots to think about, but they don't ever actually explain anything to you.
Isn't that frustrating though?
No, because then you have to like piece it together yourself, and then like a lot of the items will have descriptions, and then you'll be like, oh, this goes with that, and that goes with this, and
but what if it's
this god
an idiot?
Did this?
That's
and
my question. You what? Know, what if it's you as an idiot? Because like, what's that game? Silent Hill. Like a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, well, you know, what the fuck is this? What do I do with this? Like, well, I guess I'm stuck here for like the next 5 days.
No, it's not like that. It's not more. There's not so much puzzle aesthetic to it. It's more like Dark Souls 2. But anyway, so there's more new DLC on that I really want to get into.
That actually reminds me. Isn't it weird that we kind of live in a time now where you'll never get stuck anywhere in a game anymore? Like, it's impossible.
Because GameFAQs,
because, like, you have too many resources. All you have to do is be like, just Google whatever your problem is, and you can find how to get to that next area. It's strange.
Like, back in the day, you had to wait for that magazine.
Nintendo Power.
Nintendo Power. That's how
I Or call the tip line. Did you guys ever call the tip line?
I called the tip line.
Call the tip line. I got stuck on the Super Nintendo Star Trek The Next Generation game, and I could not...
You played the Super Nintendo Star Trek Next Generation game?
Dude, you know what's crazy? That game, when I was a kid, that game came out, it was $70 in 1994.
What the fuck? You could have bought a house for that.
Exactly, right? No, that game was expensive as shit. I mean...
great graphics, high quality.
I mean, graphically pretty good for Super Nintendo, but man, that game was frustrating as shit.
Really?
Yeah. Like we're talking like ghouls and ghosts or ghosts and goblins level of frustrating. Yeah. But that was back a lot of times when the frustration came a lot of poor game design as far as like hit detection or gameplay control, not so much level design.
Right.
Although I mean, there were plenty of level design problems. I think Super Nintendo Star Trek Next Generation game had terrible level design. It was frustrating as all hell.
Ugh.
But I mean, yeah, you're right. Like, and the games back then didn't have the space to like give you its own help screen, like tutorial system. It's like you had to learn by doing. Like, you know, it's a really great example of a game that taught you really well how to play the game was Mega Man X.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where it, like,
I think all the Mega Man games.
Mega Man games are good.
They're great games.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why they stopped making them. It was just not feasible. But like,
no, there's a bajillion Mega Man games.
Are there?
Mega Man Legends, Mega Man Command Mission, Mega Man.
Those were like more like 3D, right?
They're the 3D ones. Yeah.
Yeah, those ones I was not a fan of.
I still like the side-scrolling ones the best.
Yeah, for sure.
Mega Man, and then they had great music too. Mega Man 2's music was just amazing.
Mega Man 2 was just a fucking great game.
Yeah.
3, personally, was my favorite.
Yeah.
But, I mean, 2 was a fucking amazing game.
But, that's a good point that we bring up. It's like, we'll never be alone in games anymore.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was one of the things. Because right now I'm playing a game called Divinity. And Divinity Original Sin, in case anybody ever fucking wants to play that game. It's fucking a great game. But I realized, like, part of the way through, I stopped reading, and it's a very reading-heavy game. Like, you have to read, and it doesn't really hold your hand through a lot of it. Like, and I realized that I wasn't really reading, and so it kind of got me stuck at a couple places where I didn't know what to do. So I was just like, oh, fuck it, I'll just look it up.
Yeah.
And I realized, like, I started doing that a lot throughout the game.
Yeah.
And I realized that, like, nobody ever fucking has to read again.
Take the easy way out.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, if you don't want to, you can just fucking, you know, dialogue.
Which sucks for the people that spend, like, they're paid to write these thousands of pages of text.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, and voice act it.
And voice it, yeah.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah, it's like you skip the fucking audio. Like, God, shut up. Just skip the scene.
Right.
Actually, I watched an interview with one of the voice actresses for Xenoblade Chronicles, the new one.
Okay.
And how they spend so much money and time getting these people to write the scripts and then do the voice acting, and then so little percentage of it actually goes into the game. And then from what we're talking about, a fraction of that is something we even pay attention to.
Yeah. I mean, and it's so sad, but like, I mean, it really takes a special game to really get me to hang on the dialogue or to not skip scenes. Like,
yeah.
It takes like a Mass Effect level game.
Especially when they're translated too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
it's even worse translated.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Tales of Symphonia 2, Dawn of a New World. Oh, my God.
Are you, were you guys Tales fans?
I love Tales games.
The moment I heard Gnugagap, I was fucking boom.
I was in for the long haul.
There's a new Tales game coming out, isn't there?
I can't really. So the last one I played, there's Tales of Xillia 2, Tales of...
Maybe I have to give Symphonia.
Okay, so there's so many, and there's a lot I wanted to play, and I skipped over the ones that were Xbox exclusive releases because I don't have an Xbox. So Vesperia, Xillia I have played. There's a sequel to Tales of Xillia 2 that I have not played.
So are these games connected? Are they all...
They're all kind of like Final Fantasy, where it's like they... battle systems and names of places tend to stay the same, but the actual plots and characters change.
Okay.
So, like Tales of Symphonia, Tales of the Abyss, Tales of Legendia, Tales of Destiny 1 and 2. Like, I played all those.
Tales.
Yeah. Love the Tales games. And I mean, I know when I go into a Tales game, I know what I'm getting. Like, I know it's going to be cheesy, over-the-top, archetypical JRPG characters, but I'm in it for the gameplay because there's always good gameplay. It's always a lot of fun.
Mm.
And it's just... It's a JRPG. It's like, you know, like, it's lighthearted. There's gonna be some drama. There's gonna be those characters where, like, there's gonna be the character that's like the ladies' man. There's gonna be the cutesy little girl characters. There's gonna be the hard ass, like, I have no emotion and I must complete my mission character. Like, there's gonna be all of those, and they're just variations on similar themes. And then the fun part about Tales games is they recombine them in inventive ways. To some extent or another, sometimes more successfully than others.
Right.
But it's just good gameplay, and they'll add new technical elements, new ways to level up or improve your moves or new combat skills, stuff like that. I mean, it's really good.
But what you're kind of describing is kind of why I feel like the JRPG is irrelevant at this point.
Well, I mean, that's just Tales. I mean, the other JRPGs that are doing amazing things.
Like, I don't know, but, like, the general themes of JRPGs just don't resonate with me anymore. Like, they used to. Like, I was a big Final Fantasy kid and stuff like that, but I feel like the modern RPG has to be more interesting or complex than that. Like, you can't just have these archetypal characters, you know?
Yeah, you can't just have, like, okay, I'm going to get this power to destroy the world, and now there's these heroes that have to unite.
Right, and the hero is always an orphan from a small village.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's just like...
It's got to be a step above that now. Yeah. Got to bring more to the table.
Like, I loved the Mass Effect games just because they're so fucking different. Mm-hmm. And they were not a typical type of RPG.
I wouldn't mind having JRPGs that did more of the kind of telltale, like, choose your path kind of thing.
Oh, like a more open world.
Like more open world type thing. Or, I mean, some RPG, like Chrono Trigger, did had multiple endings. Like, you know, you know, so it may maybe not be more of a like a choice option that changes your path.
Versus
but
like a railroad.
But more like a... how you, like, more technical, like how you decide to play the technical aspects of the game changes how you, your outcome. So, I mean, yeah, there's got to be a little bit more, you're right, bringing more to the table than just the straight up, you know, orphan boy from village unites, you know, archetypal characters to gather elements to save the world.
And they're always gathering elements, like, in some form or another, whether they're in crystal form or whether they're spirits of the elements, whatever it is. Like, there's always some type of elemental feature.
And you know, part of me is, like likes the familiarity and reassurance of that, but there's also the part of me is like, I like to see something new. It's right. Like, well...
I think that's why Western RPGs are doing so well, because they're so fucking different. Like, all of them are very different.
Yeah.
Even Western RPGs that are in fantasy settings are very different, like vastly different from what you would expect. And like the newest RPGs, a lot of them are like, I mean, some of the most successful ones are like these kind of anti-heroes or like decide your create your own hero, like the Fallout games where like, you know, you're deciding.
You know what a great game would be? One Punch Man.
Did you read One Punch Man yet?
I haven't read it yet.
Go to www. I'll tell you later.
Okay.
Nerd Funnel. You heard of Nerd Funnel first. But they have them all online. And I watched all the episodes. Like, I mean, I read all the manga and all that.
Wouldn't the game be kind of easy?
Well, yes. Like, and
just,
no.
Just like push A, push X to punch, win, move on.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, okay. All right. I got to read the thingy. I got to read the story.
That's great, man. I love it.
But I'm interested to think about, like, well. So the Western RPGs are selling well in the West, but I think as far as opening to like the Eastern market, like the Japanese market, they like their JRPG. They like those tropes. They like that stuff.
Maybe it's just a cultural difference.
I think so. Yeah.
Because I feel like the biggest problem with a JRPG now for me is that I don't relate to the characters at all. Like when I was a kid, I related to the characters because it's always about an orphan boy. So I'm like, I could be an orphan boy.
Mm-hmm.
Damn parents.
Right.
But like the problem is that like I'm not an orphan boy now. Like I am at best like an orphan man, and like there's very few even like adults in these games, and the adults are always the bad guys.
Yeah,
it's a very like kind of weird commentary on like the Japanese archetype if you think about it.
Well, I mean, they're also trying to like write or create games to their market, and the market is
growing.
Younger male boys, although that is changing.
No, yeah, that's what I was telling you earlier, that they're changing with the times, because the 90s, or our generation, that we're getting older. I mean, we're still playing.
Yeah.
It's just, like, you know, see what I'm saying? Like, what we were into when we were 12 and 13, I mean, that's like, you know.
You know what I'd like to see? Do you guys ever play Earthbound?
Yes.
Okay.
That was a fucking weird
game. That was a weird game, but it was innovative, and it was different genre for its time. But, like, I want to see, like, okay, let's take a 30-year-old single dad.
Yeah.
Who is in this world and then gets sucked into an alternate world and has to balance out, like, well, I got to feed my kid and make sure he gets to school, but I also kind of have to, like, you know, defeat this evil asshole and save this princess or whatever. And, like,
and
you
I
know,
have to date.
Yeah.
Like, in a social
and there are some games like that.
I play that game every day. It's called work.
It's called my life.
So my life is called work.
But maybe something targeted to the lifestyles of the nerds that grew up with the orphan boy syndrome, and then now we are not anymore.
Yeah, that would be an interesting game to me. Like, I would love to play a game that was relevant out of Japan. Like, I just, I feel like that's the biggest thing, is like their games are not relevant now to me.
Okay, and a lot of their games, like the Persona games. You ever played Persona?
I did play Persona.
Yeah, so like those have like, you balance, you know, a lot of times in those games, you balance the social aspects and your school life with, you know, fighting.
See, those, that was great.
That was really cool, yeah.
I mean, that was the most compelling part about those games, was that like, how do I go and fight demons and at the same time try to get this girl to date me?
Yeah. And then and that's a lot of anime. I mean, if you look at all of Inuyasha, like, it's like, okay, Kagome has to split her time between ancient fantasy feudal Japan and then like being a high school student. Like, it's that dichotomy. It's like, how do I, and then like Bleach, and like how do I do normal life and fantasy life? But that never really transcended into video games,
which is weird, because like,
except for Persona.
Yeah, and you would think that it would, or it, like, it would make for an interesting, at least, system.
Although that is transitioning now. There's one called an anime they made a game out of called Danganronpa or something like that.
Danganronpa,
yeah.
I played that one on Vita.
Okay.
PlayStation Vita. It's fun.
It's fun. Okay. All right. Yeah. So there are some transitional elements, but like, for Western RPGs, that would be interesting, especially like, you know, if we could transition, like, because I mean, the lifestyle of the Japanese high school student, like, they have their uniform and they have like, they're not facing a lot of the challenges that I think maybe like a Western audience would face in that similar situation.
Right.
So I think that'd be interesting to develop.
Yeah. I think that if they had games like that, it would capture a bigger audience, just because of the fact that that's a hole that we don't have in Western games. Like, Western games don't even cover like regular life, but they at least cover something that seems more relevant because the characters are adults. And,
yeah.
You know, it, and maybe I just sound like a fucking old man talking about this, where I'm like, these games aren't for me anymore. But like, you know, it's just, I feel like the West is progressing past what, you know, like the aesthetic of Japanese games tends to be stuck in the same games that we were playing when we were kids. Like, it hasn't evolved yet.
Yeah.
As much as like we're talking about, like, yeah, they have evolved in certain ways, but like overall, like themes and like game design, or not game design, but, storylines and things like that, they just have it.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to give you a really, I mean, I don't think you played these, but I'm going to give you a really clear-cut example of this, of that exact line, is how when Nintendo did handed over the reins for Metroid to Retro Studios, which is based in Texas. It was a Western developer, right?
Right.
And they needed someone to transition Metroid into a three-dimensional gaming for the GameCube, and they knocked it out of the park. And then they're like, and then it was very empowering as a player, and it was immersive, and the music, the graphics, the level design and game design, everything was like really good. And it just got better through the sequels. And then they handed it back over to Team Ninja, which is a Japanese developer.
Right.
And immediately they encapsulated and restricted the character. Yeah. And they kind of linearized the whole thing and really kind of lessened it backward. I felt like it was going backwards.
See, and that's the biggest problem, is like, I think it's just a difference in how the Japanese digest their games.
Mm-hmm.
And because, I mean, there are still great stories or interesting stories that do come out of Japan. Like, the Metal Gear games are very interesting and very creative. But like,
as Mars has articulated many times. We love you, Mars. We love you.
But I mean, at the same time, it's like that very narrow tunnel vision of how games are played, in their view, is like not really kind of how people view games anymore.
But I also kind of feel like maybe developers know this, but the companies that are giving them the money to develop the games are saying, well, okay, but here's what works. Here's the demographic. Like, Hideo Kojima and Shigeru Miyamoto, like, and all these, you know, top-level game designers, they are innovative. They're pushing limits. They are creating new things. But at the end of the day, the company is the one that says, okay, well, here's the demographic. Here's the sales we need. Here's the money we have. Here's the game we want. And then a lot of their ideas and creativity, and like, hey, this would be really cool if this would, you know, go in a game, but like, yeah, but is it going to sell? Like, are we going to be able to sell it?
Right.
Because it's like, that'd be great for like, you know, a Steam green light or a green light release or like an indie game. But if you're a major developer trying to, you know, I'm just not sure how much room for innovation is available in these like large corporations. But that's the cool thing about a lot of the indie games and the people being able to make a lot of their own games for like mobile and things like that.
Right.
Is that they can be like, hey, what if there was a game where you're a single dad that has to fight crime in an alternate reality?
Did you ever play Catherine?
Yeah, I love Catherine.
See, Catherine is a Japanese game, and that like is a very fucking weird.
That fucking
like,
game is weird,
but it's great,
and it crosses genres. It's like a JRPG platformer Q-bert. Yeah, it's just.
I mean, it's an interesting game, and like it had interesting themes and stories, and like I really dug that game.
Yeah, but
the,
me too.
Like I was hoping more games like that would be coming out, stuff that was like innovative and kind of push the envelope, because mm-hmm. like there are kind of on rails games that we have in the West, like The Last of Us or mm-hmm. the Uncharted games, which are fucking great, amazing games. But like, I look at it as like the characters are much more relatable, and it's like a more realistic take on games mm-hmm. versus like this kind of kiddified version of games, which yeah. is like,
well, there are. I do like those odd, weird experimental games that maybe aren't the best games I've ever played, but at least they challenge me in new ways. Like Suda 51 releases like a Killer 7.
Yeah.
No, and then like No More Heroes, Swery.
Did he do Lollipop Chainsaw?
Time? Lollipop Chainsaw.
That was a fucking weird game.
Oh, what was the one with the moon? Oh, man. Where they go to the moon, there's like a mansion on the moon, and he's an assassin.
One what? Of
the, yeah, oh, I'll find out.
Spaceman Moon Assassin?
I can't, yeah. Space. Might as well be. Right. Might as well be called that. Oh, what was that called? Oh, it's so good. Or Mad World. Do you ever play Mad World?
Yeah, Mad World was cool.
And then...
Kind of racist.
Kind of... Little racist, not going to lie.
African-American characters were super racist.
But
like the most stereotypical version.
Or Deadly Premonition, which is a complete rip on Twin Peaks.
Oh, I didn't play.
Have
it.
You ever played? Oh my. Okay, we're gonna do an LP of Deadly Premonition. You and
okay,
I,
yeah, for
and
sure.
You are going to love it. You're gonna laugh your ass off.
Okay.
Because
it's supposed to be like you're laughing at it.
Not
Am
really.
Am I laughing at it or laughing with it? I guess.
Probably a little bit of both.
Okay.
It's you've seen the film the show Twin Peaks,
yeah,
Dave Lynch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's basically Suda 51. Just basically ripping off that show
oh.
in video game format.
It's like the most obvious ways possible.
In most the obvious ways possible, and you can definitely see the parallels. And it's creepy.
Is there like a log lady?
It's creepy and fucked up and funny at the same time.
Oh, okay.
So, and from judging from that film, the greasy strangler. That's kind of something you are digging right now.
Yeah,
so we'll
yeah,
definitely
yeah.
do that. So we're going to have to wrap it up for this week, but I'm glad you had awesome at Sundance.
Oh, thank you, sir.
And so we'll be back soon. We're going to get talking about probably some new shows, new games. You're getting an XCOM 2 game coming out soon.
Yeah.
We'll talk about some more TV stuff next time. I'll get a write-up going for The Expanse Season 1. We'll get you a PS3 or a PS4.
Oh.
So you can get some gamage going.
Crowdfunding.
And
yeah,
we'll,
okay.
and we'll get our LPs going up here pretty soon, and just keep funneling it.
All just right. keep is that our sign off now? Just no. keep funneling.
Just keep funneling.
It.
Just keep funneling into your more than willing ear holes. All right, until next time, you've been nerd funneled.
I love you.
Yeah.